Today is Thursday, March 27th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Democrats seize on Yemen attack leak to press for imperialist war, by Patrick Martin. The Democratic Party, which has been complicit and largely silent over the fascist rampage by President Donald Trump against democratic rights, social programs, and federal workers, has suddenly found its voice this week. Senators and representatives howled and shook their fists, not over the savagery of the Trump administration, but because Trump's top national security aides were insufficiently careful in the preparation of the bombing of Yemen, an act of mass murder that the Democrats enthusiastically support. The leak of a Signal chat thread discussing the U.S. bombing of Houthi-controlled targets in Yemen, forces opposed to Saudi Arabia and Israel, has become the central topic of debate in official Washington. Media pundits have spoken of little else. Hours of televised hearings before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday and the House Intelligence Committee on Wednesday featured Democrats grilling top Trump administration officials over the security breach, which was triggered by the accidental inclusion of Atlantic editor Jeffrey Goldberg on the thread. Goldberg detailed his participation in the thread in a major article published by the magazine Monday. After top officials denied his claims that classified military operations were discussed, he released the full transcript of the chat Tuesday night. The document confirmed his account and revealed, unsurprisingly, that Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, and others had shamelessly lied about the incident. As the WSWS noted yesterday, the accidental inclusion of Goldberg in the war plans provoked outrage from the Democratic Party and the media, not over the criminal war of aggression or the war crimes being planned, but because the discussion took place outside secure military channels. The 2 days of Congressional Intelligence Committee hearings are long-scheduled events held every year in which the top military intelligence officials give their assessments of the main global threats to the interests of the American ruling elite. As usual, these consist of an open session in the morning, held before television cameras with much political posturing, and a closed session in the afternoon for a franker discussion of the crimes being committed by U.S. imperialism around the world. During both the House and Senate hearings, Democrats generally endorsed the list of threats: China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea, in that order. Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on the Senate panel, pointed out that Biden administration officials had presented the same list a year ago. He criticized Trump for reversing U.S. policy on Ukraine and Russia, the primary area of divergence between the two capitalist parties, before shifting focus to the security breach on the eve of the Yemen bombing. This set the tone for other Democratic senators, who demanded the resignation of Hegseth and Waltz and called for an independent investigation into how Goldberg was included on the call, now under review by the Trump White House. Several senators contrasted the sloppiness of the Signal chat with the supposed professionalism of communications protocols at the Pentagon, CIA, and broader intelligence community. Not a single Democrat questioned the legality or morality of the military operation, in which dozens of innocent Yemeni civilians were massacred and several Houthi leaders targeted for assassination, both crimes under international law. At the House hearing the following day, after Goldberg had released the full transcript of the Yemen discussion, the Democrats' outrage went up a notch. Ranking Democrat Jim Himes, a former Goldman Sachs banker and leader of the right-wing New Democrat faction, opened by branding Trump's policy as, quote, "We are now on Team Kremlin," unquote. Himes pointed to Chief Mideast negotiator Steve Witkoff's participation in the Signal chat while visiting Moscow and demanded to know what kind of phone he had used. Himes referenced the 140 stars at CIA headquarters, marking agents killed in the line of duty, and claim that, quote, many of them died because of poor judgment by reporters or leaders, unquote. The most flag-waving statement came from Colorado Democrat Jason Crow, one of the growing number of CIA Democrats recruited directly into Congress from the military intelligence apparatus. Crow, a former Special Forces commander in Afghanistan, exemplifies the integration of the Democratic Party with the national security state. Crow concluded a long interrogation of the panel of Trump aides as follows, quoting, I was deployed 3 times in combat in service to this nation. I learned in my time in service that responsibility is core to leadership. It is completely outrageous to me, completely outrageous that administration officials come before us today with impunity, no acceptance of responsibility. It is outrageous, and it is a leadership failure, and that is why Secretary Hegseth, who undoubtedly transmitted classified information via this chain, must resign immediately. There can be no fixes. There can be no corrections until there is accountability, and I am calling on the administration to move forward with accountability. End quote. What does this moving forward consist of? The main criticism of Trump by the congressional Democrats is that he is weakening the global position of American imperialism by abandoning its main allies and client states, particularly Ukraine and NATO, as well as antagonizing these allies through provocations like the proposed acquisition of Greenland and annexation of Canada. On U.S. policy in the Middle East, the Democrats are fully aligned, having poured tens of billions into supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza, now expanding into the West Bank, Lebanon, and even Yemen. It was the Biden administration that launched the crackdown on pro-Palestinian protests on college campuses, a campaign Trump has now fused with his anti-immigrant offensive to create a repressive atmosphere more sweeping than the McCarthyite witch hunts of the 1950s. In a significant exchange during the House Intelligence Committee hearing, fascistic Republican Representative Claudia Tenney of New York asked FBI Director Kash Patel whether the agency was monitoring and compiling lists of individuals involved in so-called pro-Hamas protests on college campuses. Patel confirmed that the FBI was doing so. Not a single Democrat raised the issue or voiced any objection. When the Trump administration kidnaps college students for their opposition to the Gaza genocide, planning to deport them for exercising their right of free speech, the Democratic Party is silent. When Trump unleashes his billionaire co-president for domestic policy Elon Musk on federal workers, firing tens of thousands, smearing them as unqualified lazy bureaucrats, the Democrats wring their hands. They hold rallies with union officials who are equally committed to doing nothing, at which both pledge to support lawsuits that will ultimately be heard by a Supreme Court packed with a far-right supermajority. When Trump and his fascist allies move to destroy vital social programs like Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and food stamps, on which hundreds of millions of people depend, the Democrats say they are powerless to stop it. Then, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer delivers the critical vote to keep the Trump-Musk government funded for another 6 months. But when given the opportunity to attack Trump from the right, the Democrats jump at the chance. They deplore the incompetence of those Trump has appointed to fill the top positions in the U.S. national security apparatus and demand that the full power of the U.S. machinery of war, spying, and provocation be unleashed. This is a demonstration of the class character of the Democratic Party. It is one of the two parties of the American financial oligarchy, unalterably committed to the defense of the ruling class at home and abroad, the defense of the jobs, standards, and democratic rights of working people in America and worldwide depends on the political mobilization of the opposite social force, the international working class, on the basis of a revolutionary socialist program. Thousands protest Trump administration's kidnapping of tough student Romesa Ozturk in Somerville, Massachusetts, by Jacob Cross. Wednesday night in Somerville, Massachusetts, several thousand people, including students, faculty, and community members, rallied in defense of Tufts University PhD student Romesa Ozturk, the 30-year-old Fulbright scholar and graduate of Columbia University, was kidnapped by six unidentified U.S. immigration agents and disappeared into an unmarked SUV shortly after 5:15 p.m. Tuesday evening. Surveillance footage of the kidnapping showed the agents, all wearing masks to shield their faces below the eyes, ambushing Ozturk as she was walking on the sidewalk after she left her house to attend iftar, the fast-breaking evening meals of Muslims during Ramadan. Without identifying the agency they were with or what crimes Ozturk was alleged to have committed, the masked thugs grabbed her arms, twisted her wrists, and grabbed the phone that was in her hand. Ozturk cried out, quote, "You are hurting me," as the agents continued to surround and eventually handcuff her. A visibly distraught Ozturk is heard repeatedly telling the police, quote, "Okay, I'm a student," unquote. As the agents handcuff her, one of them replied, quote, "I understand it's scary. We are the police," unquote. A resident filming the abduction yelled back in reply, quote, "Well, you don't look like it. Why are you hiding your faces? Why are you hiding your faces?" unquote. The agents did not reply or remove their masks. Instead, they continued to surround Ozturk. As the masked thugs disappeared with Ozturk into the unmarked SUV, the bystander again asked, quote, "Can we see some faces here? How do I know you are the police? Looks like bullshit to me." The kidnapping of the unarmed student and the fascistic character of her detainment has provoked outrage in the United States and internationally, especially in Turkey, where all of Ozturk's family lives. Immediately following the kidnapping of Ozturk, Mahsa Kambabi, her lawyer, filed a habeas petition in Massachusetts federal court to get the student out of detention. Kambabi noted that no charges have been filed against her client, and that Ozturk's F-1 student visa is still valid. On Tuesday night, U.S. District Court Judge Indira Tawani ordered the department to keep Ozturk within the state of Massachusetts and not remove her without giving the court prior notice. She also ordered the government to provide her an answer by Friday as to why Ozturk was detained in the first place. Nearly 24 hours after Ozturk was disappeared by ICE, her lawyer, Kambabi, still did not know where she was. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, locator did not show her location through Wednesday morning. In a statement to the Boston Globe Wednesday afternoon, Kambabi confirmed that Ozturk had been flown out of Massachusetts to a for-profit immigration detention facility in Louisiana, operated by the GEO Group, in apparent violation of Judge Talwani's order. Kambabi told the Globe, quote, "I don't understand why it took the government nearly 24 hours to let me know her whereabouts. Why she was transferred to Louisiana, despite the court's order, is beyond me. Romesa should immediately be brought back to Massachusetts, released, and allowed to complete her PhD program." Ozturk has not been accused of a crime, and it does not appear she has previously been arrested in the United States. She has been targeted solely for her opposition to the genocide in Gaza. At today's protest, Alex, a resident of Somerville, told the WSWS, quote, "They want to get us scared, and it's obviously having the opposite effect. It's not anti-Semitic to be protesting genocide, obviously, but this is the scare tactic they're using," unquote. Notably, her arrest comes just days after she was identified by the shadowy Canary Mission, an Israeli-based operation that almost exclusively harasses and doxes students and faculty that oppose the brutal oppression of the Palestinian people. The organization has never disclosed its financial backers, but Reuters and Jewish Forward, citing a 2016 tax filing, noted the organization received $100,000 from the Helen Diller Family Foundation, which Reuters describes as, quote, "a prominent Jewish-American philanthropic organization," unquote. Reuters reported that the Diller Foundation gave $100,000 to the Central Fund of Israel, earmarked Canary Mission for Megamot Shalom. The outlet noted that Megamot Shalom was founded in 2016, quote, to preserve and ensure the national strength and image of the State of Israel, unquote, according to documents from Israel's Corporations Registry. The Times of Israel and other outlets have reported that under the guise of defending Israel and exposing anti-Semitism, the far-right Canary Mission website began publishing dossiers in 2015, which have been used by the Israeli government to question or ban people attempting to enter the country. The dossier of Ozturk recently posted on the site claims she engaged in anti-Israel activism, an activity protected by the First Amendment regardless of immigration status. To support the claim of anti-Israel activism, the website hyperlinked an op-ed that Ozturk had co-authored with three other students last year for the school newspaper, which called on Tufts University President Sunil Kumar to uphold resolutions passed by the Tufts Community Union Senate. The resolutions passed by the student body called on Kumar to recognize the genocide in Gaza, divest from Israeli companies, and stop selling products from Sabra because its co-owners, the Strauss Group, have provided material support for Israel's Golani Brigade. Any claim that the op-ed is anti-Semitic is pure fiction. The words Zionist, Jew, or Jewish do not even appear, while Israel is only mentioned four times. So far, ICE and Homeland Security officials have refused to detail any alleged crimes or specific activity Ozturk engaged in to warrant an immediate visa suspension and deportation. In a statement posted on X Wednesday afternoon, Tricia McLaughlin, the Assistant Secretary of DHS, wrote, quoting, "Rumeysa Ozturk is a Turkish national and Tufts University graduate student, granted the privilege to be in this country on a visa. DHS plus ICE investigations found Ozturk engaged in activities in support of Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization that relishes the killing of Americans. A visa is a privilege, not a right. Glorifying and supporting terrorists who kill Americans is grounds for visa issuance to be terminated. This is common sense security," end quote. Ozturk is one of several students that have been targeted by the Trump administration for deportation for exercising their First Amendment rights. On March 8th, Mahmoud Khalil, a graduate of Columbia University and legal resident, was kidnapped by plainclothes ICE Gestapo in New York City and flown to a Louisiana immigration detention facility where he remains imprisoned away from his 8.5-month pregnant wife. Khalil has not been accused of a crime. Yunso Chung, a 21-year-old Columbia University student and legal resident of the United States, sued the Trump administration on Monday over its efforts to deport her to South Korea, a country she has not visited since she immigrated to America when she was 7 years old. Chung was not a prominent anti-genocide protester during last year's campus encampments, but she was arrested on a misdemeanor charge by police earlier this month for participating in a nonviolent pro-Palestinian protest at the main library at Barnard College. The Trump administration is also currently trying to deport Cornell University graduate student Mamadou Tal. Like the others, Tal is being targeted for protected political speech, namely his opposition to genocide, and for suing the Trump administration over two executive orders Trump signed earlier this year that have been used to justify the kidnapping of anyone deemed anti-Israel. The dismantling of Medicare, Trump's acceleration of a long-standing class war policy, by Mark Wells. The Trump administration's dismantling of Medicare is not a distant threat. It is a reality that is unfolding with alarming speed alongside the erosion of Social Security and the privatization of the United States Postal Service. While often framed as a partisan issue, the truth is that Medicare's privatization is a bipartisan effort spanning decades, pushed by both Democratic and Republican administrations. The difference now is the speed and aggressiveness which, with the Trump administration, is executing this agenda. From shifting funds into private hands to restructuring payment models that place financial risk on corporate entities. The administration is ensuring that Medicare, a program paid into by workers throughout their working lives, becomes a profit-making machine for the financial elite. The consequences will be devastating for the working class, leaving millions of elderly Americans with inadequate medical care, higher out-of-pocket costs, and outright denial of service. Simply put, it is a matter of life and death. Medicare was created in 1965 as part of Lyndon Johnson's Great Society initiatives, offering guaranteed health care to Americans over the age of 65. It was a significant achievement of the working class, wrested from a reluctant ruling elite through decades of struggle. Funded by payroll taxes, Medicare was intended as a social contract. Workers would contribute during their employment years, ensuring they had health care security in old age. But this commitment was never accepted by the American ruling class and its political representatives. Almost immediately, steps were taken to begin dismantling the program, slowly shifting its financial structure and control into private hands. The privatization of Medicare has been a bipartisan assault carried out in stages, with the Reagan administration introducing prospective payment systems that encouraged hospital competition and opened the door to for-profit health care. The Clinton administration then created Medicare Plus Choice, which would later become Medicare Advantage, or MA, allowing private insurers to profit from the program. The George W. Bush administration expanded Medicare Advantage, diverting billions to private insurers. A systematic shift emerged from fee-for-service, where providers are paid per service they provide, to value-based care, where payments to providers are based on patient outcomes rather than the number of services provided, moving from ensuring that patients receive care to keeping costs low to maximize profits. The Obama administration's Affordable Care Act, or ACA, expanded privatization through the growth of accountable care organizations, or ACO, and value-based payments, embedding private companies deeper into the Medicare system and giving healthcare providers incentives to reduce overall spending. During his first term, Trump took these efforts to a new level, rapidly dismantling traditional Medicare under the guise of reform and efficiency. Among the most significant measures, Trump aggressively introduced and expanded direct contracting models, allowing private insurers and investor-backed healthcare groups to take on financial risk for Medicare patients, building on Obama's ACO models, but with greater private sector involvement. In 2019, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, launched the Primary Care First, or PCF, model, which was marketed as a way to improve patient health by rewarding good care and penalizing poor performance. In reality, it primarily benefited corporate interests. To avoid financial penalties, providers were incentivized to cut costs whenever possible. This often meant seeing more patients in less time, reducing the quality of care, limiting expensive treatments and referrals, even when medically necessary, and pushing patients into telehealth or digital consultations, which are cheaper but may not provide the same level of care as in-person visits. PCF normalized the idea that Medicare payments should be profit-driven rather than need-based. This approach paved the way for more aggressive privatization efforts, such as direct contracting entities, or DCEs, and more developed ACO models, which allow private investors and insurance companies to directly manage Medicare funds. Additionally, the first Trump administration pushed for price transparency and site-neutral payments, rules ostensibly to reduce hospital costs and promote efficiency, but in reality, reinforcing the broader shift toward risk-based payment structures at the expense of quality service. In risk-based models, private companies and healthcare providers agree to cover a group of patients for a set amount of money. If the care costs more than expected, the company loses money. So companies have an incentive to cut costs, often by denying treatments or limiting care. Trump's budgets have repeatedly proposed slashing billions from traditional Medicare, while increasing funding for privatized alternatives, gutting public Medicare and accelerating its demise. The administration has also aggressively pushed Medicare Advantage, diverting resources away from the public system and forcing more seniors into private plans, where insurers have financial incentives to deny care and ration services. More recently, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has promoted these same corporate interests, using the language of healthcare freedom to further dismantle public health care in favor of privatized alternatives. The appointment of Dr. Mehmet Oz to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, in Trump's second term marks a significant escalation in the drive towards privatization, setting out to complete the decades-long process of dismantlement. Dr. Oz, a television personality with extensive financial ties to United Health Group, serving as a medical advisor and board member for United Healthcare's Medical Advisory Board, was involved with Optum, another United Healthcare subsidiary. A federal judge recently found Optum to be in violation of laws and its fiduciary duty because it used financial considerations to deny coverage. Oz is now being positioned to restructure Medicare into a profit-driven system. Oz has already floated proposals to transform Medicare entirely into a system in which private entities dictate coverage and spending, ensuring that corporations, not doctors, determine who receives what type of care and who is left to suffer without it. Trump and Oz have used the pretext of fighting fraud as an excuse to cut Medicare coverage. During his Senate confirmation hearing, Oz characterized the Medicare Advantage system, which he had consistently advocated, as upside down. He alleged that Medicare Advantage was more expensive than traditional Medicare, pointing to upcoding, a well-known practice that allows insurers to categorize patients as sicker in order to get higher payments. Oz stated, quote, "I pledge, if confirmed, I will go after it," unquote. While widespread fraud within Medicare Advantage has allowed private insurers to overbill the government by inflating patient risk scores, administration after administration has ignored, if not facilitated, these abuses. Now Trump is turning his focus to gutting public Medicare, pushing seniors into privatized plans. The consequences for the most vulnerable sections of the working class will be catastrophic. Higher out-of-pocket costs will become the norm as private insurers shift the burden onto seniors through increased premiums, copays, and deductibles. Denial of service will be widespread, as risk-based models incentivize limiting services, leading to life-threatening delays and outright rejections of treatment. As funding is siphoned into privatized models, traditional Medicare will collapse, forcing seniors into corporate-controlled plans where profit is prioritized over patient health. Millions of elderly Americans who have paid into Medicare their entire working lives will be left without reliable health care, facing in their final years financial ruin or medical bankruptcy or death. The Democratic Party, despite its hollow rhetoric, has played a central role in dismantling the program. In recent years, the Biden administration continued Trump's first-term policies, refusing to eliminate Medicare Advantage's overpayments to insurers and allowing the continued expansion of privatized Medicare models. The ruling class, Republican and Democrat alike, has demonstrated that it will not defend Medicare because its destruction represents billions in profits for Wall Street, the insurance companies, and hospital conglomerates. Medicare will not be defended by politicians in Washington. It will only be protected through mass action by the working class. The struggle against its privatization must be tied to a broader fight against capitalism, for socialism, universal health care, and the elimination of the for-profit health care industry. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist Website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.